Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
That's right, your Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, as always, Matthew Rushing, and with me every single week is the one and only, currently air-conditioned, Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
Hello, hello. Do you even have fall there, or is it just like, oh, it's in the 80s?
That's an excellent question. We sometimes get fall, but our fall is like we get the weekend of fall, not the season of fall. So often we'll get like maybe a couple of weeks of it. We actually sort of missed out on our monsoon season this year, which is usually when we kind of lead into fall. We get like tons and tons and tons of rain and a lot of the big storms, and we haven't had much of that this year. And it's usually over by now, but yeah, we'll basically have a nice toasty Halloween, and sometimes Thanksgiving is a little warm and sunny as well, but usually shortly thereafter, it'll start to peter off a little bit. Nights are getting a little bit cooler, so that's nice, but I actually spent the last 4 or 5 days in Atlanta for a podcasting for women convention. And it was remarkably cool there. And all I've ever heard is nice. It's Hotlanta. So I was pleasantly surprised that I could like sit outside and eat dinner. And it wasn't terribly humid or anything. It was quite pleasant. Besides the convention, which itself was enjoyable, the weather was also quite enjoyable. I feel like this is Alpo/weather update.
You know, it's funny because every time I've been to Atlanta, it's pretty much Hotlanta because it's, you know, during Dragon Con when it's like August.
I was going to say that's like July, August, right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. But it's good to hear that it went really well for you guys. That's really fun. So, this week, of course, we're going to be talking about Chapter 3, Will and Won't. But before we get there, just want to thank you everybody for listening, checking out Owlpost, the Harry Potter podcast here on the Nerd Party Network. Of course, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. But if you do happen to be on Apple Podcasts, please do give us a star rating and review. Help other people find the show. There are a lot of Harry Potter podcasts, and your thoughts and your rating and your review make a difference in whether or not people find us when they type in Harry Potter.
I can actually speak to that because this weekend, a lot of ladies would ask what your podcast is, and several would look it up, and one person started typing owl. And when getting through just the word owl, we were the first podcast on the list. And she was like, that's impressive. So, I mean, those ratings and those reviews absolutely do make a difference.
Yes, yes. So we just want to say thank you to everybody who's given us all the star ratings and reviews over there. It has meant a lot to us, and it's definitely helped the show continue to grow. And Dre and I were just talking about how much we have left. And, well, we still have about 66, I think, episodes you said left. So, you know, it's a little more than a year left of the show. So we're excited because, well, we're getting into the meat of this story. But you can also find us on Twitter. Make sure you're following us over there at Join Nerd Party. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. Please like us there. It's a great place to on either of those platforms to interact with Drea and I. We post the shows in those places, and we love talking about Harry Potter related material with anybody who's listening to our shows here on the network. And last but not least, if you go to thenerdparty.com, we love getting emails, and you can do that by going to the contact section and choosing Outpost, and Drea and I will get that message. So make sure to check us out in all of those places. But Drea, one of the things that I really love about this chapter is it's completely different than the movie, which totally ruins everything about this whole section. And this section is so much better, partly because we get a lot of things that happen with the Dursleys, which I always find are funny. And this we're finally getting back to Harry Potter for the in the first place. And I love that as we're surveying his room as, you know, he's asleep waiting for Dumbledore, we are getting all these snippets of pieces of the Daily Prophet, which she's helping to use to fill in kind of the general milieu that Harry's in and that the wizarding world's in, which, you know, the first two chapters have been doing, and this just continues that. And I think her using the newspapers, I've always thought was really smart.
Well, it's a good literary technique that she uses to use other literature to tell a story, because you expect that to be written and expository. So it's an easy way to do that that feels right and natural. And, you know, at the same time, this whole series, she's painted these news articles as representing a little bit of bias and not being terribly reliable. So it is interesting that she chooses to kind of open up that way. And this whole first part of the book is so very different from the movie. I'm struggling to even really remember the first part of the movie because the book is so good so far. Like, so good.
Because the movie turns him into some sort of, like, as we said in the 602 Club, this risk-taking Lothario who's, like, just out there hitting on chicks. Like,
oh, that's
heck?
Right. That's right. It
it's
starts completely
awful.
Differently. That's right. Now that you say that, I totally remember. Yeah, it's very different. It's not as rich and kind of, I don't know, exciting as the former one was. So I really like how this started. I really like that. I really love that we get this whole chapter, basically of Dumbledore scolding the Dursleys.
The thing that I think that this does is it, you know, obviously J.K. Rowling is staying consistent with the character, whereas the movie, it was like out of left field. And so this just makes so much more sense that he would be huddled by the window waiting for Dumbledore. And we even get this sense that, like, as we kind of get inside Harry's mind a little bit here, he's not quite sure he believes if Dumbledore is actually going to come. Like, he's that kid, right, who just, like, too many bad things have happened and not enough people have totally lived up to their promises to him that he can't quite believe when even Dumbledore says, hey, I'm coming at this time to get you, that he will be there. And so,
well, what's so interesting as she paints it too is the whole reason is not that he doesn't trust Dumbledore, that he's down on himself. He just, honest to God, cannot believe something so good would actually happen to him. He's like, this is too good to be true, right? And it's this interesting and sort of different perspective on all of that that is kind of a different way of thinking about it.
And I love that. Like, you were mentioning that because it is absolutely right, too. This whole idea of like, he can't believe that Dumbledore is going to come get him, that they're going to go on this little, like, quest together. And then he's going to get to stay at the Burrow, and he hasn't even had to be at the Dursley's house for, you know, a couple weeks. Like, that's been it, a couple weeks. So, like, just that thought process for him is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think they said he's been there, he's leaving a whole fortnight early, which is what, like, a month, I think, about 25 days.
So. I don't know. I don't speak British, unfortunately.
You don't speak British. I think a fortnight is like a moon cycle, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
so it's like 28 days or something like that. Yeah.
But hey, everybody can yell at us on Twitter. Hashtag Owlpost. Tell us if we're wrong. So I did think one of the paper clippings is interesting because they mentioned that Scrimgeour has become the new Minister of Magic, and that within hours there's already a rift between him and Dumbledore, and that they don't say exactly what that is. So, you know, they give us that little tidbit, which I think is going to be something that'll be interesting to watch play out in the series, play out in this book. And then we get this hilarious protecting your home and family against dark forces. And reading all of them, I just thought was so funny because, one, it all seems very, like, duh. And I just really found it like classic government speak. Like, everybody should know these things. It's kind of like them putting a warning on the hairdryer saying, you know, basically don't use this in the shower.
It's the label on your mattress, right? Like the tag that you tear off after you own it. It definitely comes off like a CYA thing and not an actual helpful thing, right? And at the same time, it's really interesting because we come back to that in the next chapter. We'll come back to some of the writings that we're seeing here in this chapter. It doesn't seem particularly useful. And in fact, it kind of gives you the idea that most wizards are kind of dumb. Like, hey, let me give you these super obvious warnings because you're really dumb and you didn't think of those yourself. Like, if there's a dark mark over a resident, like over a place, don't enter. It's like, duh.
Well, and then the whole thing at the very end, like you mentioned, there's this one that's like, oh, in fury? And like, what the heck is that? Because it doesn't explain what they were, but it sounds bad.
Yeah, you're just like, that doesn't sound good, but you don't know what they are either.
I love, too, this whole thing that this book starts in some ways similarly to the very first book with the wizard and the deluminator, mm-hmm. as the lights go out on the street as Dumbledore arrives, and Harry is awakened to the fact that he's actually here. And I love that he runs down his stairs, and Dumbledore's first thing to say is, oh, I guess judging by your stunned, you know, disbelief, Harry did not warn you, that is Mr. Dursley, that I was coming. Let us assume you've, invited me in. Because it's unwise to linger on the street. And I just...
He just presumes hospitality, and I love it.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, definitely not the house to presume hospitality.
He knows that, though, which he goes on to show. He absolutely mm-hmm. knows that this is not the house to presume. However, he's going to do it anyway, because that's the right thing to do, you know? It's interesting... because it is pretty late, and we don't really know why the late hour is selected, right? Because it is awfully late, especially considering one of the ministry's recommendations was to complete all your travel before dark, and here's Dumbledore showing up at 11 p.m.
Dumbledore just don't care. Dumbledore are like a honey badger. He just don't give an F.
He don't give a hoot.
No, he don't. I love too, where he's like, I don't mean to be rude. And then Dumbledore says, sadly, accidental rudeness occurs alarmingly often.
Yeah, I just, he has no tolerance for this, for the Dursleys at all. He does not give a what. And it starts out seeming like, I don't know, like coincidental that he's just kind of being very honest with them and calling him out like, oh, I know you don't seem to be rude, but isn't it amazing how that happens anyway? And then goes more into the fact that he just at the end of this chapter, or nearing the end of this chapter, he just straight up calls him out.
It's so interesting because, you know, he maneuvers them into inviting him into the house and then sitting down on the couch. One of my favorite things has to be the fact that he also offers himself his own drink, and it's some wonderful mulled wine.
It's a mead.
Mead, which I think is fantastic. You know, the fact that Harry tastes it, and it's like the best thing he's ever had. And the Dursleys just pretend like the cups floating in the air, hitting them in the head, aren't even there, which is... pretty hysterical.
I love, though, the follow-up to that where they're like, excuse me, can you take care of this? He's like, I mean, it would have been less rude if you had just taken it, but sure, I can get rid of that for
you. Yes. Well, and one of the reasons for having this sit-down is because there are some things that have happened that have impacted Harry here, which is that Sirius has left Grimwald Place to Harry as part of an inheritance after his death. And so not only has he gained a house, but he's also gained more gold into his already sizable account. So Harry is like super rich at this point. He also owns property. And the whole thing now becomes, is he truly the owner, or does it actually pass to Bellatrix and she would be the next in line? And so they have to find a way to figure out if the house actually belongs to Harry. And the way they do that is actually pretty funny, especially with the Dursleys sitting there.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting that in this case, the house kind of has a say in how where the house goes, right? It sort of is an entity all of its own, which is totally unique. The fact that it's deciding whether Harry is worthy of it or if it needs to go to a pure blood, which is also a reminder that Harry is not a pure blood wizard, right? Which is something that we sort of often overlook because he's sort of like, he's like 75% blood wizard, right? Like he's mostly pure blood, but he's not entirely pure blood. And it's something I think we sort of forget as we read through this often and is not highlighted often. So it's, I also felt like it was a kind of little nod to that, right? I just think it's so interesting that they decide to invite Creature over, and that if Creature will listen to his commands and obey him as a master, then the house belongs to Harry.
Well, and this is really interesting too, because the fact that Creature does listen to Harry, which he's just screaming about how he won't shut up. And so Harry's only thought is to tell him to shut up. And he does. And so that the house does belong to Harry. And Dumbledore's thought is to, you know, if you don't want him kind of just rummaging around the house, you know, you could send him to Hogwarts to work in the kitchens there, and then the other house elves can keep an eye on him. And so that's exactly what Harry does, which I think, you know, it's really smart. Obviously, Dumbledore's thinking about all these things. And then we get the return of a friend, which is the fact that Buckbeak, because, you know, Sirius had taken him and been taking care of him, now as Harry's. And so Harry will just send him back to Hagrid. So it's like we kind of get a nice little wrap up to a few of the little storylines that we've had throughout the rest of the series. And, you know, they kind of get put into place here.
We also get told that Buckbeak's not going to go by Buckbeak anymore. I think he goes by Whisperwing or something like that.
Witherwings.
Witherwings.
Yes.
So that way it won't presume to be the same hippogriff that was missing. You know, that way it doesn't give the Ministry kind of any space there to do anything mm-hmm. with.
Well, and at this point, now that all of the particulars are taken care of, Harry runs upstairs and he packs all his stuff, and he's a little disappointed when he comes back downstairs because he thinks it's time to leave. And yet Dumbledore has returned to the sitting room, and he has one more request to ask of the Dursleys, which is one, like you said, this is where he calls him out and says, "You treated the boy like dirt. I thought when I left him on your doorstep, he would at least be treated like a human being, and you pretty much haven't done that." And the fact that he hasn't turned out, this is the point where we kind of called out the fact that Harry Potter should be, I mean,
a nightmare.
Kind
he
of
should
think
be a
of,
hot mess.
Yeah. And the fact that he's not is a miracle, and has nothing to do with them. And he tells them, "Look, you know, the magic that I invoked years ago, when Harry turned 17, this house will cease to have the protection that I place on him. But we need him to be able to return next year. And that will allow that magic to continue at least until he turns 17. Which, you know, for them, I think is interesting. And I also love how he really puts down their own parenting. Like, he's like, you know, at least he hasn't turned out like that kid over there.
It was something to be like, at least he hasn't been as horribly mistreated as this other kid, as that person sitting between you, referring to Dudley. Yeah, it's interesting because it really makes you, it really challenges them to sit there. And I think the chapter even ends with them sitting there wondering what he meant. I think there's something to be said about, you know, Dudley sits there confused as to what, how he'd been mistreated over the years. But really, really pointed to the fact that, like, giving the kid all he wanted was not parenting and did not do him any good, right? And you really did him a huge disservice by not forcing him to learn anything himself or become self-sufficient in any capacity. And it was so interesting that he just sort of unapologetically called him out on that.
Well, and, you know, it's so funny because, you know, yes, Dumbledore doesn't have any kids, but he spends his entire life teaching kids. So he has a good idea what good parenting tactics are like and what are not. And, you know, everything that they have done with Dudley has been awful. Like you said, giving a kid everything they want and treating him like they're the king of the world is not really a smart idea to raise a good child.
Well, and I feel like I don't want to do any sort of spoilers, but as we learn more in the next book about Dumbledore's life, we're going to learn how he has some more context for this situation as well, and how he knows what it's like to sort of rear a child. You know, from his own perspective here, it's still a ways out. So, but it is interesting that, you know, we come to find out that he actually speaks from a place of very knowledge on this topic, not just as a teacher, but actually as someone who has had to take care of a child. So, it's super, super interesting. But yeah, he just kind of, I like to think of it as this is that like vindication moment that everyone's kind of been waiting for the last five books, because of how terrible between the last chapter of the last book and this chapter in this book, you know, the Dursleys are really starting to get their own finally.
Well, and one last thing, because the chapter pretty much ends with them, you know, after that conversation, getting up to leave. And, you know, we get one thing that's going to, it's just quickly mentioned in this chapter, and it's something that'll kind of be a recurring theme for a little bit before we get the answer to, which is that Harry notices that one of Dumbledore's hands has been blackened and kind of shriveled and looking almost as if the flesh has been burned away. And he starts to ask Dumbledore about it, but he tells him he'll tell him later, you know, please sit down, before they have the beginning of the conversation about, you know, about the house and who owns it. And so this is something that it's just this real quick moment, but it's actually going to be something that's going to play out throughout the beginning of the book here before Harry gets the story on what happened then to, you know, Dumbledore's hand. And remember, in the last chapter, Snape mentioned to them that with the fight between Voldemort and Dumbledore, that Dumbledore had sustained an injury. So that's a really interesting connection. And we see here then that, at least from what we know, Snape isn't lying.
Right.
There's some sort of injury here that's happened to Dumbledore that we didn't have mentioned at the end of the last book. And so this is a mystery that I am definitely interested to see play out.
Yeah, it's something I don't think we're going to get answered for a little while now. But it's kind of like the big of right now.
Well, and they leave the house. And so Harry packs up his trunk and they send it off to the Burrow. He extracts his invisibility cloak at Dumbledore's request, and then they leave off on their adventure before they'll head back to the Burrow. And so since that's where the chapter ends, you'll have to wait till next week as we talk about chapter 4 and Horace Slughorn. So Drea, if anybody wants to, you know, catch up with you, maybe they want to hear more about the conference you went to, or maybe, you know, maybe I got to see lovely little Olive, but maybe other people would like to follow you and see how much she's grown. Where can people find you?
If you want to find me and catch up with me on social media, I am on Twitter at PCFChick, or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills, talking about Star Wars every week. It's a lot of fun. If you're a big Star Wars fan or you just like Star Wars, it's the place for you. You can find me over on the Trek FM network. I'm doing two shows. One is called The Orb. I do that with Chris Jones, and that's where we talk about Deep Space Nine when we get a chance. You can find me on the 602 Club, our general geek show, where we talk about all of the fandoms we love. In fact, well, Drea Kaufman, my illustrious co-host here, as we've mentioned, is going to be talking about Frozen with us soon. And if you've been to the stores recently as we're recording this, Frozen merchandise is everywhere now. So, and then last but not least, I do a show called Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney as we talk about films through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.